Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat up close and personal to some dynamic and inspiring women. This is Nikki Bannerman, and my influential woman today is a fellow but award-winning podcaster. It's Imrielle Morgan. Hello and welcome, Imri. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Thank you for that. And it's great to meet you. Thanks for inviting me to your fab media hangout here in Borough. It's really cool. We need to start singing. Imri Morgan is the award-winning host of Wannabe Podcast and the founder of the Shout Out Podcast Festival. So tell us about your Wannabe Podcast, which you host. How did it come about?
It was basically a representation of where I was at in my life, in my business, and in my career personally. So before I started Wannabe, I was doing a pop culture and politics style podcast, which was all about the news. And I found that really depressing. So Wannabe was really about looking at where my career was heading. And I was feeling really lost and confused about it. And I thought maybe other people might be experiencing that same confusion, especially at, I'm like 29. So I was at my career transition point. And I just wanted to have a look at what options were available to me in the media, in entertainment, and in the creative industries. So I started Wannabe to basically talk to women in those spaces, but occupying the different levels and all of these jobs that I had never heard of or even knew or thought were possible. And I thought, let's just have a chat about how you got to where you want to be in life, and maybe other people will be inspired to take on those jobs too. So it's really very much targeted at young women, probably just leaving uni or just trying to figure out where they're heading in their careers. In the hopes that those women's stories will inspire them to kind of take on a new role or a new title, or just think about their careers a little bit more holistically.
Brilliant. So it's definitely a very positive thing, isn't
Absolutely.
It? In terms of the stories that help. And a parallel with the influential women in that we're inspiring other women and helping them with their lives by positive role models, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Every single person I've had on the podcast has been some sort of role model to me. They've inspired me in some way. And there's people I get really, really excited about. Some of them have my career goals. Like, they've been TED speakers. They've been a part of massive productions and on sets that have just been multi-million pounds or dollars, depending on how you look at it. So for me, I'm always continually inspired by all of the women that have been on the podcast. And also what's really great about it is that I tend to focus on the challenges or issues that they're facing before they even got there in the first place. And some of them are still experiencing some of those challenges, whether it's a black woman being the only one in that space, or it's just really difficult to say no to things because you're a woman. And so you end up doing all of these jobs or tasks and burning out. So there's a lot of bigger, wider issues around that. And it really inspires me to hear how they overcome it, how they choose to handle and deal with those situations and still continue to do that. And I think it's important that other young women hear that too, that it's not going to be plain sailing just because you've got this really nice job. There's still going to be a few roadblocks along the way, and I don't want anyone to be blindsided by that either.
That's certainly very helpful, because even when I spoke to Kirsty Young on Desert Island Discs, she said that so many people she's met have learned from failure. Those challenges are really important, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I've failed so many times. I've probably failed more times than I've won, which was really hard for me because I had a massive fear of failure, like a huge one. I think in my adult life, it's been a lot harder to navigate, and no one prepares you for that, because I was like, get A's and B's and do really well in school. And that's easy enough to do, I guess, if you put your head down and get on with it. But once you get into adulthood, like, it's just full of just things just being thrown at you, and you're just not going to do well at it. And no one really prepares you for it. So, of course, you're not going to get it right the first time. And I think, yeah, everything I've done has been as a result of a massive fail. And then you learn and you iterate and you basically polish it off and you get better and start winning at things. And I think this year has been the year where I've definitely grown the most, just because of the podcast and everything that I'm doing. Simply, like, it's just been a really great year because all of the bad stuff happened in 2017. And so I'm in a much better place now, and it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for some massive, massive fails.
Massive learnings and massive fails, and fear and humiliation is what we're protecting the youth out there from, because we need to make it real, don't we? So you talk to high achievers and entrepreneurs and have a weekly session on your podcast, and you've got sponsors and you've won awards, Bose and Estee Lauder. I mean, that's huge. We're in awe of you. We'd love a sponsor. How did that come about?
Acast, to be quite frank. So Acast is a monetizing platform in podcasting. They tend to match you with sponsors, they match you with advertisable sponsors that are interested in your either your audience or the subject matter of your show. And Bose were doing a campaign to support loads of new podcasts that were launching late 2017, early 2018. And I happened to be one of those shows. And I guess the messaging was really on point. So it is talking to women about their careers and just being like high-flying women. And Bose is a high-end headphone brand. So I think if you're speaking to high achieving women who tend to have a lot of disposable income, maybe they might want to buy high end headphones. So I feel like it really aligns. Yeah, that too. And so I think there was just an alignment in that. Estee Lauder was definitely more of a random one. Like, I definitely use Estee Lauder products, but I never imagined that they would want to sponsor someone like me. Being black and a woman, like, I know that they've done a lot more for their diversity in their campaigns and things. So that was actually a really nice get for me, just because it was a really nice, like, oh, you are thinking more broadly in terms of like the diversity of the women that you are catering for. And that was for an advanced night serum. So that was really interesting. I think they were definitely targeting a specific section of my audience with that one. I tend to skew like slightly younger. It's like 18 to 24, 25 to 34. I believe night serums are targeted a little bit older, but those listeners exist too. And it was quite nice to get that campaign, for sure.
And your skin's looking absolutely radiant and amazing, and we're waiting for the headphones to arrive, aren't we?
Thanks, yeah. This is all Fenty. Sorry, Estee.
Brilliant. So you're a multi-award winner, and twice. How did that come about?
With the British Podcast Awards, so this was for Melon and Millennials that we won the Represent Award for bringing new audiences into podcasting. That was actually a really nice win for us, just because we had worked so hard. Like, I think we were about a year and a half in when we won that award, and we had been doing so much to basically push the narrative that people are not monolithic. Black women have different opinions. We actually have things to say about politics and the society that we pay taxes to. So that was really nice that we got that recognition, and we were acknowledged in that way. So yeah, we applied for that award category and we got it. Thanks, British Podcast Award judges. And then we, a few months later, won the Mixcloud Online Radio Awards for Health and Lifestyle Chat. So I like to think of I contributed to the lifestyle part, because when the show wasn't being political, it was very much centered around well-being, mental health, and kind of just looking after yourself. So it was quite nice to get that acknowledgement that at least the part that I really, really cared about on the show was then acknowledged by Mixcloud in that way. But I have no, like, I didn't know we were up for it for a really long time. They kind of just said, hey, you're about to win this award. Here's your certificate. And I was like, oh, great. Thanks so much. Awesome. So one was we had to apply for British Podcast Awards and put ourselves in the running, and the other one was just they kind of spotted us and said, hey, we should say thanks for your contribution to podcasting. And I was like, I accept.
Well done, you. You've come a long way, and podcasting, you're certainly pioneering it. So you do live show recordings with your guests as well. You know the podcast with that rude name that's chart-topping, Dad, I Wrote a XXX? I interviewed them once for the Radio Academy, but they're now doing a sellout live at the Albert Hall. They've got theatre, film, books, everything to follow. I mean, this all comes out of podcasting. It's amazing. Have you got vision like that?
I personally do not have those kinds of aspirations, but I know that the founder of the network does. So as a unit, we are looking at how we can transition the content that we're making into a more visual medium, not necessarily right away, but I do think podcasting is growing as steadily as it is growing. The opportunities are starting to be more clearly mapped out. So yeah, they've now, my dad wrote up, no, has now got a HBO special or a show, which is really, really cool. And it basically just goes to show that you can create something and it can translate across different mediums. And there's been a few other examples of that happening. And I think for us, we'd love for that to be the case for any kind of idea that we generate to then become this media, go into TV and film, because I still feel like that's still the big thing that people look for success. Like, we don't look at podcasting alone. It's like, where does it take you next? And TV is definitely something that would be really cool to have, even if it's like a talk show from one of our hosts, or a short film because of the audio, like an audio drama that we produce. I think that's a really cool space to explore, but I don't know if we're quite there yet. I think we've still got a bit of work and polishing to do.
How exciting. So good times ahead. Now, Podcaster Accelerator, workshops you do, and I mean, I'll come on to it in a minute in terms of the fact that you've launched your own podcast festival, which is just amazing. But you do Podcast Accelerator workshops. I mean, how did you become interested in career development and being an overachiever? You're doing an MBA. You call yourself an overachiever, don't you?
Yes, I do. It's such a problem. I can't say no to things. It's a real challenge for me to just say, no, I don't want to, or I can't. I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's because of I have a weird scarcity mindset where if I say no to something, I'll miss out. And then I have like massive FOMO and, oh, that opportunity would have been really great for me. So I don't say no a lot. And that then means I take on way more than I can ever fit into a week. But yes, I just finished my MBA. Thank God. It's finished. I'm so glad that's now over. I have passed it. So there's that. But in terms of career development, how that got started, it was really random because I didn't think of my podcast as a careers podcast. I felt like I was just having nice conversations, but then they force you in podcasting to categorize yourself. And I was like, well, I would put mine in business. But then the more I kind of delved deeper into it, the conversations I was having tended to lean towards, how did you land into this career? And I found that I was meeting a lot of women in particular who just had job titles I just never heard of. Like, I didn't know what a storyboard artist was. I just didn't know. I've heard of storyboarding. I didn't know that they write the scripts. I didn't know they also drew the stuff. Like, I had no context for what that entails. And I was like, if I don't know, how many other young women don't know? And wouldn't even know that that's a possibility. So it just kind of, I think it happened somewhat organically in that I was just really curious about people, and then the conversations tended to focus more on their personal and professional development in with regards to their careers.
And you're encouraging more women to get involved in podcasting. You say you're a Tim Ferriss and Gary Vaynerchuk sandwich, you call yourself. Tim is the master, obviously, of self-help books in the US with a four-hour theme, and an angel investor in Uber and other companies. We need him on our team. And Gary is a Belarusian, is that the way to pronounce it? A Russian-American and a wine critic in digital marketing and social media. I mean, these are gurus, aren't they? Their followings are just off the scale.
Yeah, they're huge. Yeah, I only said that I was in their sandwich because when I launched the podcast, in the business chart, it was like, I think it was Tim Ferriss was number one, then my podcast, and then Gary Vaynerchuk. And I was like, these are actual living legends. Like, I screenshotted it, and it was like my banner on Twitter for ages, because that almost never happens. I guess it was like a testament to the support I had built up over the previous podcast, and then just kind of launching with Bose as a sponsor. It was a really good November. Wow. For me to just be like, wow, I'm in between like the two people I adore the most in like the business world. So yeah, it was a very surreal experience. I still maintain that it's a quite a surreal one, and I'm going to maintain that I am the peanut butter in the sandwich.
And interview them, maybe? Have you reached out?
I have not. And Gary was around like very recently. He was in London. I have not reached out. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I think I have a very specific vision of the kinds of guests that I want, and they don't necessarily fit that archetype. I definitely am still leaning more towards women. I do have the occasional men, but I think in terms of platforming, to be quite candid and quite blunt, I do want to kind of spotlight women of color. And when I am interviewing men, I would like that to be men of color, just because I think that representation matters, and there are enough avenues for you to hear what Gary Vaynerchuk and Tim Ferriss has to say. They are literally everywhere, and their content is really amazing that they do share quite a lot. So I think it's, for me, I definitely want to scope out the people that we don't know, and look for the really underrepresented voice within these like spaces, because there are some phenomenally talented people. Someone like Nathan Bryan, who's a TV and screenwriter for the BBC, he's just completely blown me away with his career. But he just doesn't get like the same amount of recognition or, you know, acknowledgement for the work he's done. Like, he certainly is recognized and awarded in many ways. But I think there are avenues and spaces where he should be able to have to be able to tap into a space like mine that says, hey, let's talk to the community about what you're doing, and how do we uplift and build you up so that more people can see you and feel like they can do what you do too.
Definitely, definitely needed. How did the Women's Podcast Festival that you organized come about? I mean, you are the CEO of the Shout Out Network.
Yes, I am. CEO is a big title. I'm really starting to own the title now because I don't know if I fully, for a long time I had the title and I don't think I fully realized what it entailed. I was like, I'm just running this thing and it's really cool and they call me CEO and it's fun. I could have just chosen like manager, MD, like so many other titles. But CEO, I think it was definitely aspirational at first and now I definitely own it because I know a lot more now about how to run a company than I did back then. With the Women's Podcast Festival, that really came off the back of the first ever festival we did was to celebrate the diversity of podcasting across the board in the UK. And we did bring over American artists for that. And it really was just to pay homage to the fact that we are here, we exist, and people should know more about our stories and our narratives. And that was really successful. It was like an 800 people a festival, which was great. The women's one came about simply because we were really ambitious with the first festival. Like, it went well, but we were so ambitious. We lost quite a bit of money on it. And it was really hard. It was really, really tough. The women's one, I wanted to scale back. I wanted to just focus on saying thank you to the women that have inspired me in podcasting, particularly in UK podcasting, because I don't think there have been, because it's so new here, there haven't been that many opportunities to say, hey, I see you in this industry and thank you so much for being in this industry. Besides the podcast awards, we don't have that many other opportunities to say thanks for your contribution. So I definitely felt like the time was right to say thanks to these women and also to get more women into podcasting. Like, that was definitely my priority. That I think podcasting has been a tremendous confidence builder for me. I'm a much better speaker as a result of it. I'm more confident public speaking in front of crowds. I can definitely voice my opinion in more direct and concise ways as a result of podcasting. And I think for a lot of women, they would benefit from that because I know that for some, it's really difficult to speak up for yourself in the workplace. It's really difficult to advocate for yourself in any situation. And I think that's across the board. And I think anything that could provide just a like 10% improvement in any of those areas would be so beneficial to women. And I think podcasting has been that for me. So I definitely wanted to spread the joy in that regard while saying thank you to all of these incredible women. And so that's how the Women's Podcast Festival came about, is I wanted more women to get into the space or consider it as an option. But also to say thanks and I see you, we see you collectively, to the women that have been doing it for years, some of them. So it was a really great day. It was about 200 women at King's Place, which is now like the home of podcasts. And it was beautifully done. The environment was absolutely perfect. Everyone really came to learn, to network, and people were really, really there to just be supportive of everyone in the room. I don't think anyone had like a terrible time there, which is really good to know about an event, especially a festival.
Good for you. Oh, I'm sorry, I missed it. Yeah, it was over a weekend, wasn't it? I couldn't make, but it looked amazing. Gosh. So everyone out there, you know, young and older, should try, you know, podcast, even if they don't publish it, to just record something they're passionate about, shouldn't they? What was it like working for the Huffington Post then? Weren't you a writer for them too?
No. This was a rumour that Nigel Farage started. So this is so funny. Nigel Farage and I got into a head-to-head on the ITV EU referendum with it was him and David Cameron doing their, I don't know, debating, but they weren't debating each other directly. It was very strange. So I asked a question about Black British people in the UK and his rhetoric around that. And the next day, because you can't say anything about Black people on any kind of TV about the EU referendum or Brexit, I got then thousands, and I mean, like, it was something close to like 10 to 12,000 racists in my mentions. I got death threats. My family were being tagged into like Facebook posts, all because afterwards, the news just replayed my question over and over again. And then Nigel Farage on the next day on Good Morning Britain with Piers and Susanna, I went on that morning and he was on a few hours later and he said, oh, she's a journalist. She's not a real person. I'm like, journalists are people too. He was like, you're not a real person. She writes for the Huffington Post. And all of these like racists kept regurgitating that I'm a writer for Huffington Post. Then Huffington Post put out a statement saying, she's not a writer for us. She actually does this other stuff. But the Huffington Post has like a community pages where you can contribute as like a blogger. So you can get access to their portal and publish your stuff there. And that's it. Like, I had it through work where I had applied to be kind of like a writer or contributor to their pages. But it's in no way, it's not affiliated with them in that way. And it says at the bottom, like, this is from X place. So yeah, I had contributed to the Huffington Post. It was all about like tech talent because I was working in recruitment. There was like nothing remotely relevant to politics or anything like that. And yeah, so he started that rumor that I worked for the Huffington Post, and it was not quite true.
totally not the case. What strong women or men have inspired you personally then?
I'm going to say Ava DuVernay, the film director behind Selma and The 13th, just Wrinkle in Time. She's just phenomenal. I got to meet her and she was even more breathtaking in person. So her career has been phenomenal in that her famous line is she didn't pick up a camera until she was 32. She worked in film PR pretty much her whole life and then decided that she wanted to be a director. And at 32, she did that. And one of my goals in life was to be a Forbes 30 under 30. I'm now 29, so I don't know if that's really going to happen. There's still like a really small window of time. So if anyone happens to have direct connects to that, please, I would like to be at 30 under 30. But in case that doesn't happen, Ava is the person that I look to and constantly reminds me that I don't need that particular accolade. Like, I don't. I will be fine. And she has, now she's about 40 something. And she's just gone on to do phenomenal, phenomenal things. Winnie Mandela is also a huge inspiration, simply because she really held it down during the apartheid movement. Like, she carried that movement whilst he was locked up. Like, Nelson was locked up. Like, who was still leading the charge? And she was really instrumental in that. And I really respect that. And I guess for a guy, if I had to pick a guy, I would say Gary Vaynerchuk, simply because he has like a no BS approach to just marketing, getting your voice heard, getting your content out there. And I really just like how gutsy he is and how like he's the kind of person that says like only like 1% of you are going to do what I say and actually see the results. The rest of you are going to just hear it and not do anything. And it's very true that we often get a lot of good advice, but we don't take it. And then we wonder why we don't see those results, or we only half-heartedly and then wonder why it doesn't work out for us. And he's very much like, just go all in, do it. And he's very sweary and it's just really raw and real. So those are, I guess, my top three people.
They all sound very inspiring. And you do workshops, and do you do that by day and you do that by weekend? You've got Spotify workshops, you do road mapping. What's that about?
Oh, I do so many things. There's not set workshops. So the Spotify Sound Up Bootcamp is actually a 1 week workshop that we're designing for November. So Spotify came to us earlier this year and asked if we would help them run a Women of Color bootcamp because they want to help more women of color basically get into podcasting and create more distinct and different styles of podcasts. And I'm really like, as a network, that's something that we completely stand for. We want to see the diversity, not just in demographics and race and gender, but also in the style of show that's being created. And so we really jumped at the opportunity to, one, do that with them because they have the resources and the budget that we just could not do ourselves. We've been doing it for a while, but we only have so much that we can do with our own money. So yeah, it's a 5-day workshop with them. All expenses paid for any women of color that come through. It's 10 finalists, and then the ideas that they like the most will go off and be made by Spotify, which is a really, really cool opportunity, and one that you don't get that often. In terms of my job in general, at the moment I'm a freelance festival organizer for the Mindful Drinking Festivals and a company called Club Soda, which is the Mindful Drinking Movement, about helping people not change their behaviors, but helping people that want to change their drinking habits think more holistically about the alcohol and what options are available to them. And then I was a marketer before that, and I still do marketing, actually. So I am really everywhere.
I mean, it sounds like there's been loads of them already, and you're not even 30. What has been the proudest moment of your career so far?
I'm going to say the Women's Festival, actually. Last year, I would have said the last festival. This year, I'm going to say it's the Women's Podcast Festival, simply because the environment was really everything I could have wanted and so much more. It was really great to see so many talented women on the stage just sharing their experiences of being in this industry, which I don't think we get a lot of opportunity to see and hear. And it was also just really nice to connect with the women in the room. And what I really loved was that there was diversity on the stage. So it was a very inclusive lineup. You saw different body shapes and sizes and colors and backgrounds from working class right up. And you saw that reflected in the audience too. And I think that's so important. I've gone to so many conferences and events where I'm like either the only black person in the room or I'm the only woman in the room. Yeah. And it's really daunting. And it's just not like you don't feel safe and you don't feel comfortable. You don't feel like you can say what you need to say. And I think that's always a real shame in any kind of situation. Like I think you're doing a disservice to the people there when you don't allow them to be able to feel safe or comfortable in those spaces. And I think people could do better. So I feel like people could do better. I might as well just lead by example. And so creating that space was really phenomenal. We had people in who were disabled there feeling very comfortable in that space. We had queer and trans women and non-binary people there who felt very comfortable in that space. And I think that is my proudest moment, is that I could create that space and people felt like they felt included and didn't feel weird about who they were or their identity or what they were trying to achieve, and their ideas were well received and people were really just supportive. And I think that's all I've ever wanted to do. So to see it manifested in person in real life, because obviously I have online communities that reflect that, but in real life it was breathtaking and I really enjoyed it.
Good for you. That inclusivity, you know, it's really important. And you know, it's only starting to be sort of the now way to think, but it always should have been. And you're really pro-inclusive, aren't you?
Yes, definitely pro-inclusivity. Every time, every single time I do an event or an episode, I'm constantly thinking about how someone will receive this if they are from a disabled background or from a LGBTQIA background. And I'm always just kind of like, how is this going to be received? That doesn't sound right. And it is a, I guess for some people that could feel annoying to them. I know some people are like really like, oh, has PC gone mad? But I think it's important that people feel comfortable. No one should feel out of place. And so, yeah, it is almost integral to everything I do. And I definitely don't get it perfectly right every time. Someone did say, like, I would like to see disabilities represented in the panels next time. And I was like, do you know what? Done. Like, I will absolutely go out of my way to make sure that that's included next time. So it is about learning and building up on those things where someone said, I didn't feel like this was represented. Yeah. Okay, I didn't get it right this time. Fine, I'm going to try and make it work for the next one. And I think the community we've built and the community I've built has been great for learning without it being a negative experience, which I think often happens where people get called out online for missing the mark. And I think there are better, more constructive ways to handle those situations so that you don't scare someone from trying again. It should be a case of, okay, yeah, take it on board and I'm going to do better next time, because that's what we can do, really.
That's a good way of looking at it, definitely. And people should look at their delegate list. You know, I've been to tech talks with three women in a room out of 200, and I've been to TV talks and the same again. And they should look at those and then invite a few more.
Yeah, definitely. And hand out comps. I've gone to a few audio and like radio conferences because I get invited to speak at them, being the only woman and also black again. And yeah, you look at the room, just like half the time I look at the ticket price, and it's not to say that all people from different backgrounds are poor, because that's not the case. But I think even look at your pricing and how is that accessible? We always have with our events, we're always like really mindful that this should be accessible to anybody. No one should feel like their bank balance is the thing that prevents them from learning or gaining an opportunity. But I think I look at some of these audio conferences, I'm like, I work in this industry and I still will not spend £200 on a ticket for something. Like, I get that it's really important, but also think about how, if some people can afford to pay that, what about the people that can't? And what are you missing when they're not in the room? What is lacking from your environment when those people can't be represented? Yeah. So I think it's really important that people look at the whole thing holistically, from your pricing to your delegate list, like you mentioned, and even down to your panelists, because all of those things contribute and matter.
And freelancers can't afford that, you know. Exactly.
Yeah, no, I freelance too, and I was like, still no. And like, podcasting is still a bit too new for me to be making any serious money from it.
So what are your other hobbies?
I'm really into art now. I say now, I've always been kind of into art and nerdy art, like science. So I don't like, I don't know that I necessarily pursue it in any particular way, but I do like to follow really strange things on Instagram. And I have some really bizarre hashtags that I follow of like MoGraphs. And I do really enjoy Netflixing and just like scouring.
Binge-y.
Yeah, I like to binge, but I also just like to watch credits and just see who's there and like maybe Google them and find out what they're up to and maybe invite them to the podcast. Like I'm really into just finding obscure people. So that's a really good pastime of mine at the moment.
That's a fellow podcasting thing, isn't it? Curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very curious about many things. I do want to get out and see some of the London Design Festival stuff that's happening. There's a really cool exhibition on biodesign happening. I would really like to go see what's happening in biodesign. And Somerset House is doing their biennale. I can't even say it.
You've got some quirky hobbies out there. That's interesting. Yeah. Do you have a mantra for living your life then? Welcoming everyone, isn't it? It's like group hug.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be about inclusivity, about making everyone feel welcome and safe. Yeah, I think that's probably my mantra now. I don't know if I probably have a few, but to say I have like one definitive one, it's definitely about making everyone feel comfortable, safe and welcomed in anything I do and create.
Have you ever felt unsafe then?
Oh, sure. in life, just in general, in my career. Yeah, I've definitely had some moments of feeling unsafe in the sense, not that my life was put in danger, except for the whole Farage thing. There were definitely some death threats there where that was pretty terrifying. So that was like a really extreme example. But in, I guess, day-to-day stuff, I had a job where I used to write. So I still, I'm technically still a writer, but it really dampened my confidence being in that job where I went from a lot of high praise for my work to a lot of negative feedback, a lot of criticism, and really just undermining my ability to do my job, which I had been previously praised for by the same exact person. So for that to go from from this really bright and sunny relationship to a really horrible negative one, it put me off writing for a really long time. Like I still struggle to write, even to this day, where people will be like, can you write this article? And I'm like, I would love to, but I really physically can't do it, because in my head, that person has made me feel like I'm not good enough. And I know on like a very logical level I am, but I can't get that feeling out of my head. And that makes me feel very unsafe, even in my own mental space, where I'm like, why is this person who actually means nothing to me holding so much weight over my ability to do something that I actually really enjoyed? And so I guess that's like a really, I guess, a more mundane example than death threats from Nigel Farage's followers.
Gosh, but you're using that, you know, bad experience to help others and make everyone feel inclusive, which the positive has come out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I never want to make anyone who I work with, who I invite into my home or into our network, I never want anyone to feel the way I felt about it. It has driven quite a lot of how I move and navigate through this world, even like determine the kind of manager I am, because being the leader of a company means you actually have to manage people, which is really hard. So much harder than I could ever have imagined. And yeah, I've definitely been more cognizant of how I speak to people, how I criticize, and how I basically just go about navigating negative feedback or criticisms that I might have. How do I make this more constructive? And again, it all ties back to that. Yeah, like you said, making people feel safe and welcomed and like their work is good enough. And if it's not good enough, how do I have that conversation in a really positive and meaningful way, so it doesn't then mean that they don't write for 2 to 3 years?
Well, you've learned a lot, though. There's a lot, but we still are not keen on what that person said.
Yeah.
What's your next goal, then?
TED.
TED Talks, if you're listening.
Yeah, I would love to do a TED. I definitely want to do TED. Like someone asked me what my goals were very recently, and I was like, I've pretty much achieved them all the things that I thought I wanted to do, I've achieved. And then they were like, but you haven't aimed high enough, you haven't dreamed big enough. And I was like, well, it's not my fault that everything I thought I couldn't do, I've done now. And now I have to figure out what's next, which is a really weird but wonderful place to be. But yeah, I definitely would love to do a TED talk. I have not yet determined what the idea that is worth spreading is, but eventually, when the time is right, TED would be my next biggest goal. I guess with the podcast and the Shout Out Network, my next goal is to basically create space, like physical space. I think we're really great at creating online communities, especially with podcasts. Like everyone can listen wherever they are. And that's a really solitary experience. But creating more of those physical in-person meetups, so if it's through the festival and the women's festival, and even in more informal events, I would love to be able to keep doing that, because I think it's important that we have that human interaction, because recording sometimes can be the most loneliest thing, especially if you're like Skyping a lot of people. It's like, oh, I'm just in my room by myself. So that kind of creating those physical spaces for us to connect on and have that human interaction is really important for me. And then I think for us is building out our studio so that we actually have a physical space where people can come record with their friends and basically just create the content that they want to create. That would be my next big goal.
What about TED Talk for uni students? I think you should be in there empowering all of those people that are suffering at uni.
I would love to do that. I would definitely go on a university speaking circuit, because I had such a terrible experience at university that I can now learn from and speak from a place of confidence. But it was I come from a working class background. So going to university when your family is not good with money, and also you don't always have a lot of it. Plus then you'll go, like I went to Durham, so I was really one of like 20 black people there out of like 1,000. So you're going into, as a minority, into sometimes really white spaces, really elitist spaces, because it's Durham, and it's like night and day, and no one, like I was the first to go to university in my family, so no one could prepare me for that. Like there was just no one in my family to do it. So really having that conversation with students who are suffering probably with depression and anxiety like I got in second year would be really important to me. It's like mental health is so important. We did do a live show at Leeds University for Melanin Millennials, and we did talk about, you know, I think at that time, I think 2 or 3 students had committed suicide at Bristol Uni, which just broke my heart, because I don't think anyone mentally, I don't think it's just minority kids or kids from working class backgrounds that suffer. I think it's across the board that everyone is kind of coming to this place with massive adjustments to make, and no one really tells you what to do, and you don't know what help is out there. Half the time, you don't even know what depression is or what it feels like. You can't identify or vocalize what those things you're experiencing are. So I think absolutely that, like on that front, definitely talking about that side, but also on the other side, what do you do afterwards? Because I definitely had no idea. So, definitely.
And that's exactly the need that I was thinking, you know, from obviously hearing everything in the media, and that's even gone up actually since I read recently the statistics, and you know, in terms of, there's definitely help needed there. We'll have a chat afterwards.
Yeah, no, we should, because it makes me really sad to know that my sister's about to go to uni. She's actually deferred for a gap year, and I was like, it's so important that you just go and know what to expect. And like, at least she's now had me and my two younger sisters, who are twins, so they went at the same time. She now has us to prepare her mentally, and like, this is what's gonna happen, and you should expect this. And I think it's so important to have someone do that if you don't have anyone else, for sure. But yeah, she doesn't even know what she wants to do. And I was like, this is exactly why I created this podcast, because if you don't know, here are like all of the options. You should be able to like look at these people and say, oh, okay, so fashion, that's what you want to do. Here are all of the possibilities within fashion. It's not just designing the clothes. Yeah. There's a manufacturing process. There's working with leather goods. And you could even design tableware. I spoke to someone who studied fashion, and she now does beautiful tableware designs. And she just didn't expect her path to go there. And I was like, I didn't even know that was a job that people did. Like, I didn't. I mean, obviously, I have really nice design.
I think you're right. People want to hear it, though, especially, yeah, you know, the age group that you're talking about. They want to hear it. They don't want to see a spreadsheet on this is the name of a career. They want to hear it and, you know, feel it and see it, don't they, in terms of experience?
I think it's important that it's the whole thing of you can't be what you can't see, and you need to be able to see, hear, experience that, and see a real life person basically doing that job. Like, I did not know it was possible to be a podcaster until I heard, obviously I heard Serial, but Serial just was like that's just so out of reach for like a lot of people. But it was only when I listened to The Read, which is an African-American podcast, and they were two queer black people, actually, talking about their experiences in New York, talking about pop culture. And I was like, wow, you can like speak so openly, and like people listen to it, and like thousands of people listen to that. I didn't know that was possible. And that's when my mind began opening up with all the possibilities of what we could talk about and what we could do as this network. So it is a case of seeing it means that you now believe it's possible, and then you can start developing your own ideas around how you navigate those spaces. But until someone like kind of mentally unlocks that for you, you're kind of just there thinking, oh, I'm limited to basically like sport or music.
Amazing. I think you're definitely where you want to be, aren't you?
I'm getting there. I'm definitely there. I felt like I got there and now I'm like, oh, I've kind of hit like a plateau now. I need to go one level up. And now I just realize like the whole world has just kind of opened up in front of me and I'm like, which path do I choose? So I like graphic design. I might go and explore that.
At the Biodesign Festival. It's all very exciting. The future is very exciting for you. So lastly, what message would you give to men and women listening to inspire them?
That's a really hard question, Nikki.
Well, that's because we've just given them so much inspiration already. So I don't even need to do that. You've been incredibly inspiring today. So thank you, Imrie. It's been fascinating. And hearing about, you know, your culture, your pop culture, the politics, everything you're interested in, I think it's really inspiring for young people and really needed right now. And you are definitely not a wannabe anymore. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I'll just do a close. Thank you for your time and indeed your energy for giving us help influencing women and men to want to be and to get involved in something they really are passionate about and help someone else in the community or going forward with their career and their life. Thank you. This Influential Women's podcast is presented by Nikki Bannerman and co-produced with Juliet Nichols. Please keep listening for more podcasts and subscribe for free on Audioboom and Apple Podcasts.